Okay, I'm excited to welcome the fairly new president of the Illinois State Bar Association on this show for the first time. Rory Weiler, who's also a family law attorney, joins us. And Rory, congratulations. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
Well, thanks for the invitation, John. And of course, it's a great honor to represent ISBA's 28,000 plus lawyers.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you went to NIU and then you went to the University of Chicago Law School. So you're long well known in the area.
Well, yeah, I've been practicing for about 43 years now. I started so long ago that it was called the John Marshall Law School back in the day. but my practice is devoted solely to, I shouldn't say my practice, our practice. I have a son and a partner and an associate. But we do family law and nothing but family law. So we're a one-trick pony, but it's a pretty good trick.
Yeah, it's an important one. You're often dealing with some of the most emotional things that people have to go through. And family law is a lot more than the one trick of divorce. There's so many other things that have to do with family law, which I do want to dive into. But I first just, you know, we say Illinois State Bar Association all the time on this show. And I just like to remind people who you guys are and what you do. So, and, you know, I know you represent a lot of lawyers and you help a lot of lawyers out, but this permeates down to everyday folks here in Illinois, too, right?
Well, it sure does. I mean, we have we're very, very actively involved with our partners in the legal aid community. Our members are out there providing pro bono services through the various providers. We have established an initiative to bring lawyers and legal services to underserved communities. We started in the rural areas of our state with what we call the Rural Practice Initiative. And based on the success of that, we're going to expand that initiative into the underserved communities in the urban areas of our state, starting downstate in the larger cities, Peoria, East St. Louis, Belleville, et cetera. But the idea is to afford the public access to a lawyer when they need one. And we find that more and more these days, folks are choosing to go unrepresented because they think that they can't afford a lawyer. And one of the missions of ISBA and our members is to let people know that there are opportunities and options available to them, no matter what their income level might be.
I think that's such a noble cause, an important one in terms of how our fabric of our justice system and society holds together, and an important part moving forward. I think we all would love to, you know, quote that justice is blind and equal application of law across all. But if someone is representing themselves in court and they haven't studied this thing, there's a good chance they're not going to get an outcome that they want, an outcome that they more than likely deserve, right? I mean, lawyers help connect the dots and help inform people of the best practices and decisions to get them the best possible outcome. And when they represent themselves, 99 times out of 100, probably more than that, they're not going to get that.
Well, that's true. And of course, our judiciary and our judges at the local level are great.
Of course.
They try to the extent that they can, because obviously there are ethical constraints that prevent them from giving non-represented or self-represented, rather, litigants legal advice. But if we can, and we have worked with our Supreme Court to put some legal forms online that, mm-hmm. that folks can access. And we are, as I said, constantly working toward, making lawyers available at a fee that people can afford. We have a lawyer referral service through the Illinois State Bar Association that many folks take advantage of. And quite often, especially when people are injured through, the acts of others, they don't realize that you don't need any money to hire a lawyer. In the vast majority of those cases where someone else has injured you or a loved one wrongfully, there are many, many, many lawyers who are available to meet with you and work with you. And really, if there's no recovery, they don't receive a fee. So
right.
It's important for people to know that.
We have a lot of great personal injury lawyers that come on this program, and we always get a few texts from people. You know, there's a reputation maybe out there about personal injury lawyers and what they end up making. But we always point to the fact that you're coming to them on their worst day, and that they're taking the case. And if they don't win, they don't get anything. They're in your court, right? They're helping you out, and of course they deserve to be compensated for that as well. I think it's just we're just trying to challenge the misnomer out there. And there's so many great personal injury lawyers who really have a passion for it, and they are part of the Illinois State Bar Association. I love when they come on the show to try and dispel some of those issues. And, you know, we often talk about on the show with lawyers about, oh, we've all heard the bad lawyer jokes, and we've all heard the lawyer jokes in general, and we can all chuckle at them, but lawyers play such an important part in the fabric of who we are and what our country means. And I guess it's fine to jest at it as long as at the end of the day people realize the important function that lawyers play.
Well, and yeah, I mean, as lawyers, we've all heard the jokes. And, you know, I don't know too many thin-skinned lawyers, so it's not the jokes. But what it is, you know, frankly, John, it's a matter of educating the public. I mean, the lawyers, first of all, lawyers created this country for the most part. And yep. Secondly, lawyers are the defenders of the rule of law. We, the lawyers, are the folks who are out there representing, you know, those folks who most need representation. As lawyers, it's our responsibility to give voices to people who society will not hear. That's our job, and if I may say, I think we do an exceptional job of it. But, yeah. You know, I don't know too many lawyers that care about lawyer jokes. I know a lot of lawyers that are, you know, that care about their clients and seeing to it that, in some measure, justice being somewhat of an amorphous concept. But what we want is we want everyone to be treated fairly and for everyone to have their day in court. Yeah. And that's our job.
Yeah, usually when I go to commercial break, they've got a new one for me, so a new joke for me. So everyone's a part of it. So,
want to hear it.
Yeah, right. You mentioned the Illinois Lawyer Finder, which is on the website, ISBA.org. And boy, what a great resource. And when I open that up and start to, you know, look through it, I become immediately more aware of how many things you do need a lawyer. And I get a lot of calls here, and we get people wondering, do I need a lawyer from this? And if you're already asking that question, there's a good chance you do. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're asking that question, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Because, clearly, if I have a toothache, I'm not going to sit here and ponder, should I go to the dentist and get it taken care of? That's what professionals are there for. And certainly that's the role that the lawyers play in our society.
For sure. As I look at the categories, business, consumer law, criminal defense, education, schooling, immigration, labor, employment, I mean, it goes on. And I guess that's, you know, one of the benefits of having this website, ISBA.org, and then this find a lawyer, you can hit the button and look. But if nothing else, it's not a bad thing for everyone to look at even the different cases that lawyers take on, because I think a lot of us do things without lawyers and end up with results that could have been a lot better if we had them. So even if it's not something that pertains to you immediately, look at the list, because you may be surprised to find out what a lawyer can do to help you.
Well, and again, as I said, it's surprising how affordable, a visit with a lawyer or lawyer services can be. We have opportunities under our rules now to provide what's called limited scope representation, which generally means you may have a problem that requires an attorney's input to secure some resolution or a partial resolution, but who can guide you through the rest of it. And that is a very, very underused but very affordable way of accessing legal advice and legal services.
For sure. And I just looked through these lists, and we've had lawyers on this program over the past, well, it's just been about a year and a month now since we started last July, and we've kind of checked all these boxes. And it's interesting to me, I'm always wondering, this seems a little bit more niche or something that is, maybe doesn't impact as many people. And I am proven wrong every time on this show by the number of callers we have that have questions about things that I didn't consider. And it just goes to show that, you know, everyday Illinoisans, friends and other listeners in other states, we're dealing with a lot of things in our lives, and everyone has that one thing that is important to them or that they've been impacted by. And it just goes to show the how broad a lawyer's reaches are.
Well, not only do I concur, but I can say that I'm a lawyer, and you know, it doesn't happen daily, but it happens frequently where I go, wow, that's a legal issue. I didn't even know that particular law or regulation existed. So
yeah,
you know, in a country of our size and in a state of our size, believe me, it's amazing what issues can come up that require a lawyer's time and services.
Well, let's just say that since before the show started, my entire experience in the law world was what I saw on TV or on the movies. I think that's where a lot of people approach like what law is, and the reality is, for the most part, it's way more boring. No offense, but it's
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please do.
Yeah, it's a lot less exciting. It's a lot more boring, and frankly, it's a lot more real. My wife is a great fan of legal dramas, and I simply can't watch them because I sit there and go, oh, that would never happen. Oh, no, no. What about an objection? You just have to, you know, as lawyers, I don't think you find too many lawyers that watch those shows.
But, right, yeah. Right. No, I'm the same way about any show about radio or TV or anything like that. I'm like, that's not how we do it. We got about 3 minutes before the news. We're going to get to the family law stuff after the news break, but I just want to give you a chance to talk about what your goals are here for this next year as president of the Illinois State Bar Association.
Well, first and foremost, as I mentioned, we need to focus our attention on access to justice issues and reducing the number of self-represented litigants in our courtrooms. And part and parcel of doing that is us coming up with programming that, like our rural practice initiative, that's going to pair lawyers with either existing practices or with communities that need lawyers in them. The need is overwhelming, and it's a project that is near and dear to my heart. Part and parcel of that is going to be to work with our partners in the other bar associations. You know, Chicago Bar, of course, is a large association, and there are others throughout the state, to come together with our legal aid providers and address this very pressing issue. I also plan on, when the opportunity presents itself, getting to our elected officials and urging them to increase the funding for the Legal Services Corporation, which is the primary funder of legal aid services throughout the country. Those are a couple of big things. The other item that is always on every president's agenda, of course, is being able to increase and enhance the services for our members. We're all fighting for dues dollars, and we understand that you know, every dollar is precious, and people aren't going to keep paying you unless you're providing them with the services that they think are of value for their dues dollar.
Do some of those services and help you provide also extend to maybe law students that are currently in that? Do you try and establish those relationships as someone is even entering the process of becoming a lawyer?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll be out in DeKalb talking to the incoming class of 1Ls this upcoming week. And I think, speaking for me and the other officers, getting back into the law schools and rebuilding the bonds with the law school deans and letting the students know not just what the practice is about, but what ISBA can do for them when they become practicing lawyers is a very important issue for us.
For sure. All right, Rory, we're going to put you on hold, but we're just starting our conversation. After the news, we're going to chat a little bit more about your firm, Weiler and Langle. Am I saying that right, by the way, Weiler and Langle?
Yes.
All right.
That's it.
And it's WeilerLengle.com. If you're interested in reaching out, we'll get into all of that coming up on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. This is Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got the president of the ISBA on the line right now, Rory Weiler. And Rory, you're a family law attorney Well, that's your main job. I imagine ISBA is something that you have to fit into the rest of your work schedule, which I imagine is busy. Why family law? Is that always what you had your mind set on, or did you get into it and fall in love with it? What led you to that?
Well, it was somewhat of an acquired taste. I originally thought when I got out of law school, I'd like to be a criminal defense attorney until I met my first criminal. And I told the partner I was working with, this guy belongs in jail. And he said, that's not our job. I said, I need to be thinking about a different job.
But, right.
No, I started working in a small farming community, Elburn, Illinois, about 50 miles west of the city. And the gentleman I was working for at the time had a fair amount of family law practice, but he became a judge. I took over the firm, and the long story short is the more and more family law cases I did or had, the more I was referred and took on, and it sort of became a situation where I didn't have time to do anything else but. So having developed some modicum of experience and expertise, I figured I would, concentrate my efforts in that field, and it's worked out obviously very well for me. And I am, for 43 years, and I'm grateful for that.
I imagine that obviously these are very difficult and emotional cases. Maybe some of the most emotional cases happen in family law. Not all of them, but they all, especially if they involve kids, that's an issue, or businesses, that's a problem, or something you have to solve and deal with, and there's a lot of back and forth. But at the end of the day, you're trying to solve problems for people and give them, new opportunities to move on and be happy. And the end must be a rewarding part and kind of your guiding post to why you do what you do.
Well, that's where, a lot of the satisfaction in our practice doing divorce and family law comes from. It's you get people at the worst, literally it's like a death. It's the death of, a marriage and they're grieving, and it's one of the worst times, if not the worst time of their entire lives. And you have an opportunity to kind of shepherd them through the system. And it takes a great deal of empathy and compassion. And obviously, I think we have that, because after 43 years, we're still doing it and people are still calling. So, that's where the satisfaction comes from, really.
I've talked to a lot of family law lawyers who I think that you guys, after a certain amount of time, deserve a psychology degree or something along those lines, because you're dealing with such emotions that you end up being, I don't want to say a shoulder to cry on, but in many ways you have to do a lot of listening and helping people through it. I know you're not giving relationship advice per se, but you are navigating them through a world and you've seen a lot of it. So there almost becomes this, you're the expert on difficult situations, and I'm sure you have developed a skill in talking to people and expressing that empathy and sympathy and trying to get them along that journey.
Well, most people just want somebody to listen to them. It's worked very well for me, and I think my colleagues, and obviously I've got many successful colleagues, if you're a good listener, and you give people the opportunity to tell you, and not just what their story is, but why their story is what it is, how they feel, why they feel that way. Being able to listen and to empathize with people and to show them a little compassion, especially in today's world, it's really, appreciated. And I'm constantly amazed at how infrequently it happens. But,
yeah.
That's what we try to do, that's the approach that we take. These aren't our divorces. These are our clients' divorces, and we tell them right up front, you're in control here. We're here to help you, but we have the easy part. We just have to tell you what the law is and give you advice. The hard part is having to make decisions, and
right.
That's well, as I said, that's it's kind of a philosophy of practice. It seems to have worked well for us.
In all this time, has the family law landscape changed a bunch, or are we still dealing with very much the same issues we've always had to deal with, and just kind of maybe the methodology or the difficulty in certain cases, those have been consistent throughout? Like, I talk to family lawyers all the time about how, like, finding assets, is it harder now? I mean, are more people hiding money in cryptocurrency? Like, what has changed over these years, right?
Well, the technologies and the mechanics, those things change. The law has certainly changed, but the one thing that hasn't changed, that's remained the same probably since Adam and Eve first got together, is that there's an emotional backdrop that no matter what year or era or generation you're in, remains the same. As I said, I'm kind of spanning now 43 years of practice. So, you know, is the practice the same as it was when I started? No. Are the laws the same? No. The laws have changed dramatically even within the last 5 or 6 years. But the approach, the human element is pretty much the same. It's just what? That people have more access to electronics now, so they can, you hear from them more frequently.
Oh, I don't know quite how to take that, but I think I do. You mentioned the laws that have changed, including big ones, and I'm kind of naive on the subject, but I know we're like a no-fault state here in Illinois. Is that one of the laws you're referring to that has changed, or is it different, or is it all sorts of things?
Well, actually, that changed 20 years or so ago. It did recently change back in 17, but not so dramatically that it made, because it's still pretty much a no-fault state. But what we've done, and I don't know really if I think this is a good idea or a bad idea, but what we've done is when I say we, I mean the state legislature and in writing up the laws and so forth, we've come up with a lot of formulas, and we've come up with a lot of, we've taken some of the lawyering out of divorce work, which
interesting
on some level is a good thing. For instance, child support and maintenance. When I first started, every courthouse or every circuit I went into, rather, would have their own little chart as to, you know, what's the income? Okay, here's what the child support is, blah, blah, blah. Now we have statewide guidelines that cover child support. So if you're, someone who's making under $500,000 a year, you know, obviously that covers a lot of ground as far as people goes.
Most of us,
pretty much a computer. Yeah. It's a computer generated outcome. What's your income? What's your spouse's income? How many kids? And, outcomes a result. So, that part of it, as I said, it's taken some of the lawyering out of it, which I think in a lot of cases is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, we still have a few more minutes, Rory, but I want to put you on hold because I do have a couple more questions. If you don't mind sticking around a little longer, is that okay?
Sure. Absolutely. Love to.
Great. The president of the Illinois State Bar Association and family law attorney, Rory Weiler. And I will give out his website, WeilerLengle.com. That's WeilerLengle.com. These are free plugs for someone coming on here to chat about these things. Let's take a quick break and we'll get more here on Let's Get Legal. All right. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We've got the president of the ISBA. He's a family law attorney, Rory Weiler. All right, Rory, when we were in the pandemic and we were filling time here on the radio, we got a bunch of stories of people saying, oh man, the divorce rate's going to go through the roof after the pandemic's over because so many people have to hang out a lot longer than they thought they would together. Did that end up happening in your world, or was that just something that we prognosticated or thought would happen that never manifested itself?
Well, I don't know that it increased dramatically. We noticed an increase in activity at our firm. But principally, I think that the effect of the pandemic was that, people who might have been thinking, I'm going to stay in this for the kids, which is a pretty common, thought, sadly, because it doesn't benefit the kids. But anyhow, I think it was more of a cathartic event for people saying, you know what, I'm not waiting. I have to make a move. So while I think there might have been a slight uptick in the divorce rate, I wouldn't say it was the kind of deluge. And I was one of them. I thought, oh, you know, this is people are going to be going crazy to get out of marriages. But as I said, there was a slight uptick, which I would say right now is probably settled back. You know, sadly, we're in the high 40s, 47, 48% of all marriages end in divorce.
Whoa, and, I thought that number had come down further than that, but I mean, you would know.
It has come down a little, but it's still in that very high range. And one of the reasons it's come down, quite honestly, is that a lot of people are waiting longer to get married, and a lot of people simply aren't getting married. But not getting married, if you're going to complicate your life and have children or, you know, buy things together and so forth and so on, I mean, that you still need a lawyer, because now we're talking about a parentage case instead of a divorce.
Yeah, so. We've done stories and had people on about cohabitation going up, and you know that's people's choice to do that, but it really doesn't provide anyone any legal security in many ways, unless you draw up some sort of contract in some way. But I did want to ask about you know, maybe advice is the wrong word, but you know, you mentioned that 47-48%. Of course, no one gets married thinking they're going to get divorced. Is there things that people can be doing, even if they're in the happiest of marriages, that may actually strengthen a marriage, but things that people can do, not to prepare for what if things happen, but just things that people can do smartly in case something bad were to happen down the line? Like, is there conversations that spouses should be having together that are going to make that process easier should it ever come to it?
Well, I think the easiest way to avoid a divorce is to communicate with your spouse, your significant other. I mean, if you're not talking to each other, that's going to create problems, and the less communication you have, the more likely it is that you're going to end up talking to me or one of my colleagues about a divorce or some other form of family law release. I mean,
should we know, like, each other's finances? Like, should we know passwords to logins, to accounts? Like, I mean, I know that's not necessarily for you to determine everything that we do in our own lives and relationships, but does that make things at least a little bit more so that everyone knows what the situation is? Because I just hear all the time that finances and spending or whatever it is ends up being such a controversial thing for people.
Well, when it comes to that, you're talking to somebody who's been married for 47 years. So at this point, my wife and I have very few secrets.
Yes, true.
But I think it's just a matter of good economic planning for, you know, if you're not intimately involved with your spouse's financial situation, which in my world is a red flag. I mean, if somebody doesn't want you to know what's going on in his or her life financially, that reflects to me, well, a lot of things, but it reflects a significant problem in the relationship. Mm-hmm. But if you're not going to be sharing that information, you certainly ought to have some vehicle in place that, you know, if something happens to me, look at this. So that, you know, there is some ability to dig through that stuff should the need arise. But you know, you mentioned cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and all that a little earlier. It's a much more complicated economic world than it was even 10 years ago.
Right.
So I think that a good marriage is built on a foundation of mutual trust, and that involves sharing and communicating. And it also happens, it's also a good thing if you happen to enjoy the company. Yeah. You're married to.
Yeah, that's a good box to check
the kids
there.
Grow up and they leave, right?
Yeah, exactly. You should like the other person. That's a good advice here from Rory, the president of the Illinois State Bar Association. One other thing I wanted to ask about, I know it's always a topic that you guys, I'm sure, are diving through, is allocation of parental rights and responsibilities, or child custody, visitation. I know the landscape has changed. Look, I mean, so many more marriages involve two people working equally. Women are breadwinners often as much as men are, maybe not as often, but more so than there used to be. And of course, there's same-sex couples as well. So has that world changed in terms of the implication that the mother would get the vast majority of the time with the kids and not the father? I mean, like, that's an old, you know, adage. It's like, dad on the weekends. Is that world changing a little bit?
Yeah, it has, actually. I mean, it's a slow process because there are still a significant amount of, I hate to use the word traditional, but
right.
that you know, dad went to work and mom stayed home kind of family. But you're right, in today's society and in today's culture, it's hard for folks to get by with just one person earning the all the income. So I think the courts are becoming more and more adaptive to the unique situations that we see. You know, maybe mom's the breadwinner, but maybe mom's the one who's at home during the day with the kids because she's working remotely.
Right.
Or vice versa. So the thing that I encourage people to do always, and I always tell my clients this, is, you know, it's not about what the standard or normal allocation of rights and responsibilities situation is. What works best for you and your family? Tell me what you've been doing before there were problems in the marriage, and let's try to fashion an arrangement that, first and foremost, in my mind, and maybe this is my, grandfather voice speaking, but always in my cases, what's best for those kids? You know, the kids are the ones that really get torn apart in a divorce. And
right.
I'm always mindful that while I have a client to represent, I also have an obligation morally to try to steer people in the direction to do what's right for their kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great advice. And I think that's something that probably both parents understand, right? And they want to be a part of that too. And when you can remind people what the main focus is, it can calibrate conversations a little bit differently. All right, just one more minute left, Roy. I just want to ask you, you know, a lot of people out there fear getting a divorce. They feel like it's going to be the messiest thing in the world, and it might be, right? There might be real big complications. But there are situations where, especially when there's mutual respect, there can be cleaner divorces today than maybe people think, right?
Absolutely. Collaborative divorce is a growing field where the parties sit down and try to work through things with a variety of professionals to do what's right for them and for their family. Mediation is mandated in some situations, but it's becoming more and more common as access to the courts becomes more and more difficult. So alternative dispute resolution is out there in a variety of different methods and methodologies, and I'm a litigator. That's what we do. But in order to be a good litigator, you also have to know how to settle cases. And we are absolutely trying to be at the cutting edge of those alternative dispute resolution methods. Again, it's the client's case, and we want to assist the client to handle it in the way that they want to see it handled. And I think, the best approach.
All right. Roy Weiler, president of the ISPA, WeilerLengle.com, WeilerLengle.com. Roy, we'll talk again soon, okay?
I look forward to it, John. Thanks very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to wrap things up next here on WGN.